before?
Yeah. So I mean, after, I remember back when it was like $200.
Okay, so now when it crashes, then buy, right?
Yeah,
okay,
exactly.
Okay, make yourself a problem. Now when it
you're
crashes,
right.
You're gonna buy different.
Yes. I think this is good.
Goody, goody.
That's what I'm
doing. Yeah, when I get into Bitcoin, there were 8 cents.
So you're telling me you're a billionaire now.
8 cents per pop. It was hard to buy large amounts of. Because there were not many in the
situation. But yeah, 1300, that's huge, yeah, that's huge. So my brother bought Bitcoin when they were for $800, and then they were like 800, 850, dropped to 600. He panicked.
And
he
sold.
Why? If he waited, right?
It is. I mean, it is.
He would double his investment.
It's true, but it's just so volatile that it's maybe it's frightening, I guess.
Yeah. So he panicked because he thought it's gonna continue dropping. So that I get 600
yeah,
back than nothing, right?
You think that it's gonna crash soon now that it's going to
It's not
gonna
crash too soon, but it will crash eventually. So give it 2 months maybe.
Okay.
And then it's time to buy, exactly. Apparently, got to the same price level as gold. One minute.
How long does it talk? Half an hour? Okay. Ready?
I'm ready.
All right, so it's my pleasure today to introduce Sergey. Who will be giving a talk about the malware detection. Sergey has been with us for a while. He has been doing master's degree before, and now he will continue towards his PhD. And his talk is about 20, 30 minutes long, and then after that we'll have a discussion and questions for him. Is that okay?
Yes, all right. So.
Yep, we can hear you fine. So
you
can
hear
start.
Me fine. Great. So, hello. As Marius introduced me, my name is Sergey Banin, and I'm a first-year PhD, and this is a presentation of the part of the work that is already done, and the topic is the memory access patterns for malware detection. So, the malware brings significant threats to the modern digitalized society, and today many malware samples become detected every day. So, for example, by the December of the year 2016, the Wireshare database contained around 27 million of samples. So when the new malware sample is detected, there is a time gap between and malware vendors can update their databases and forward them to customers. So there's a high interest in the improvement of malware detection techniques. So there exist two main approaches in malware analysis. It's static and dynamic analysis. And malware developers use different obfuscation techniques, such as like encryption, polymorphism, metamorphism, and others, in order to change the static properties of the malicious files. And sorry, yes. So such techniques makes signature-based and static detection analysis harder. But the best solution in this case is to apply dynamic analysis, because when the obfuscation techniques were applied for malicious files, they did not change the functionality of the files, because this is one of the goals of obfuscation. So, yes. And to perform the dynamic analysis, we need an automation, and we need to create, for example, a virtual machine with a standard baseline to which the virtual machine will be reverted after each malware sample will be executed. So the only thing that the malicious executable cannot avoid is execution on the hardware. So in this paper, we focus mostly on the memory analysis. There exist different types of memory analysis, like content analysis, time slices, or activity analysis, and in this paper we will focus on the memory activity analysis. And on the next slide, I will present just the related works. So there were several authors that also used memory activity for malware detection. So, for example, they used the fact of presence of memory read and write operations during the execution of malicious executable, or they counted a number of memory read and memory write operations, or the last author, they were trying to detect information access anomalies. But nobody from those authors and all the others that were found quite relevant to our work, nobody from them used the memory access patterns analysis. So in this paper, we propose a novel malware detection method and analysis capabilities. With the help of dynamic binary instrumentation tool, it's an Intel pin, we record the sequence of memory read and write operations and for each executable. Then we extract n-grams from that memory sequences. Afterwards, we create the features from them, we perform the feature selection, and we train the machine learning models. And afterwards, we test our models under the different conditions, such as different n-gram sizes, different number of features, and so on. So there were three research questions. So is it possible actually to use this memory access sequences or patterns for malware detection? Because nobody has used it before, and it was a main question. And then the question was, is it possible to use n-grams on memory access sequence? So if we have a lone sequence of memory read and write operations, for example, 1 million or 10 millions of such of them. So how can we divide them into n-grams to use efficiently in the machine learning models? And another question was how length of memory access sequence will influence the accuracy. The reason for such question is because when we launch it to the executable, we were not waiting until it will finish its execution, because it can execute itself for a long time, it can run some infinite loops and so on. So we were limiting the execution of the executable until it generated some certain amount of memory access operations. So our methodology is based on the fact that similar opcodes produce similar memory activity. And from the literature review, we know that opcodes are reliable features for malware detection. So we assume that memtraces produced by opcodes might be reliable features as well. So on the slide, you can see an example of memtraces produced by opcodes. So move called for register and memory arguments will produce read because it reads from the memory and places some data in that register. And the add operand called for the register and memory operands will produce read and then write because first it reads from the memory and then it adds it together with a value from the register and then it writes it back to memory. So read and write. And on our hardware, so executables were able to produce 10 million of memory access operations in around 0.053 seconds. So this is just an example of the memory access sequence. It's not 10 million, as you can see, but it's a real data sample. And we decided to record the first 10 million of memtraces because it did not take that much time, but still it gave us a lot of information. And we extracted the n-grams of different size from 16 to 96. And afterwards, we selected the best 200, 400, or 800 features. Also, to answer the third research question that was presented on one of the previous slides, we pruned the original 10 million sequence to the sequences of first 1 million of memtraces and first 100,000 of memtraces, just to compare the performance of the models. So our project was limited to figure out if this methodology works at all and to see which problems we can meet during the implementation and provide some suggestions and possible improvements. And yeah, it was limited for launching only PE32 executables and under the Windows 7. Well, it was just the limitations brought by our hardware platform. So yeah, but in future it should be improved for sure. So on the slide you can see a general data flow of our experiments. So we created the data set, then we selected, so we downloaded the data set of malicious files, we created the data set of benign files from different versions of Windows, then we selected 1,000 malicious and 1,000 benign files, and malicious files were selected in the way that they contain graphical user interface. The reason for such choice was because the malicious files without graphical user interface can start and stop in a very short period of time, so they were not producing out enough amount of data, and there will be a need for very long waiting time. So from the files that we selected, we launched them. Not all of them were managed to launch due to different reasons. Many of them had anti-debug and anti-VM features and so on. So afterwards, we recorded the 10 million of memory access operations and we pruned the original sequence to the 1 million and 100,000, extracted the n-grams, and then we performed the feature selection. But I will focus on all of these steps a bit more in detail on the next slides. So on the next slide, I'll just show you what we did with the data set. So the data set was the large pack of malware downloaded from the VirusShare, and benign data set, as I already said, was created manually from the CLID installations of Windows Windowses of different versions. So the reason for such choice is that there's no commonly known big enough data set of benign files. So this was the best choice to find the benign executables. And as I already said, we found we took only those that contain graphical user interface, and we took also the smallest files, just to to make the execution time the total execution time of that file smaller, so the data gathered from the beginning of the execution will be more relevant. So yes, from the 2,000 files, only 1,204 were launched successfully. So on the next slide, we'll talk about the feature selection process. And yes, so how we select the features? For each class, like we have two classes, benign and malicious, we construct a vector of n-grams that are unique within the class. So each file were launched and generated, let's say, 10 million of mem traces. Then we extracted some amount of n-grams, and we did it for every file within the class. And then we merge that vectors from each file, and we're getting the general vector for benign or the malicious class. So, and each n-gram in that are unique. And also we count the class-wise frequencies in order to find which n-grams are more relevant features or not. So we from two vectors, like benign and malicious, we delete those n-grams that are present in both vectors, regardless to the class-wise frequency. So after that, we are getting two clean vectors that are that has unique n-grams for either benign or malicious class. And from each of clean vectors, we select particular amount of n-grams, like 100 or 2 or 400, with the highest class wise frequency. Yes?
So you said like both vectors. So are these both vectors you are you referring to the benign and the
so
malicious? Or
so
like
I have two vectors. One was constructed from benign files. Mm-hmm. One was constructed from malicious files. And then we found those elements of that vectors okay. that present in both of them, and we just delete them.
Okay.
So we have
so
two vectors of unique
like
features.
Mutually exclusive sets now.
Yes,
so.
Yes.
Okay.
You're right. And so yeah, from that n-grams that we selected from each of vectors, we construct the feature set that will be later used for training the machine learning models. Yeah, and the last thing we need to mention is the bitmap of presence. This was actually the files that were loaded into the machine learning algorithms in order to produce the models. So bitmap of presence is a very simple thing. So we have features, those that we selected as the best features, and we have instances that belong either to the one or to another class. And if a particular feature is present and one or another class, then we're having one on the intersection of row and the column, and zero if it is not present in that particular instance. So for all combination of parameters, like all different memory access operations lengths for each of the n-gram size and for each number of best features that we selected, we created the bitmaps, and afterwards we trained the machine learning models using the five-fold cross-validation in order to assess the quality of our models. So the models were chosen pretty straightforward. They're just the most popular models usually used in the relevant paper. So it's naive Bayes, Bayesian networks, decision trees, k-nearest neighbors, artificial neural networks, and support vector machines. So for the achieved results, it is possible to claim that k-nearest neighbors and artificial neural networks provide the best maximal accuracy of, as you can see, 98.92%. These results were gained for 1 million of mem traces and 802 features. So yeah, the more features we were taking, the better accuracy we're achieving. So on this slide, results for 800 features and all mem trace sequence lengths are shown. And as it is possible to see, the 100,000 on the top is not enough to achieve reliable detection rate. So you see there are around the accuracy is around 50 or 60%, so it's a bit more than a random. And from the achieved results, we can claim that growth of memory access sequence length results in accuracy growth. So the bigger memory access sequence length we have, the better accuracy we're getting. So also, we need to notice that because our scripts ran out of memory, they were not really well optimized, it was impossible to get results for the 10 million of mem traces and the n-gram size of 96. So on this slide, we present results achieved by machine learning algorithms with mem trace sequence length of 1 million. So each of those tables present the results of machine learning algorithms for features extracted from 1 billion of mem traces, but the length of the feature vector is different. So it's 2, 4, and 800. So as we can see, the bigger feature vector we have, like on the bottom, the better accuracy we achieve. And well, this is quite natural dependency. And also we found that bigger n-gram size, like in each of the table, bigger n-gram size results in higher accuracy as well. And because the sequence of mem traces is basically a binary sequence, because it's read and write operations, just two symbols, so the longer subsequences we have, and the longer subsequences we have, the more unique they are within that big vector of the memory access operations. So to show overall dependencies of the achieved results, we use accuracy achieved by the k-nearest neighbors algorithm, because it showed most of the best results within the tables. So on this chart, the vertical axis stands for accuracy, the first horizontal axis stands for n-gram size, so it's 16 here and 96 here. And the second horizontal axis stands for parameters combinations. Yeah, it's not really easy to see, but yeah, I'll explain it like that. So so these labels are named as followed. So K and N, because it's K nearest neighbors, then the type then the feature number, so we're having KNN 200, 400, 800, and then again 248, 248, 800. And afterward, it has a type, and the type shows the memory sequence length. So H for 100,000, M for 1 million, and F for 10 million. So it's H, M, F, and again, so it's H, it's M, and it's F. So on this side, we're having the accuracy on the vertical axis for the 10 million of mem traces. And on the next, so yeah, I should probably explain a bit more this chart. So in general, growth of feature number results in accuracy growth. So like, for example, here, it's 2, 4, and 800, and we see a growth of accuracy. And also increasing of an n-gram size on the left horizontal axis is so increasing of n-gram size results in accuracy growth as well, but around the n-gram size of 36 we can see that accuracy is a bit declining, and on the next slides we will explain that fact. So during the feature selection process, we used to calculate intersection of unique n-gram sets for both benign and malicious executables. So this intersection then was subtracted from both benign and malicious unique n-gram sets. So in this table, we have several columns. It's an n-gram size, like from 16 to 96. Then we have the intersection size. So it's basically how much of the n-grams from both benign and malicious executables are found in both classes. And afterwards, we have a number of unique benign of unique n-grams found in benign executables and in malicious executables. And the last column is ratio, and the ratio is it's calculated as intersection size divided by the sum of benign unique and benign and malicious unique n-grams. So the bigger intersection ratio, the more similar to vectors from benign and from malicious files. So as we can see from this table, the bigger n-gram size we have, the more unique these two sets become. And it was found that there is a visible correlation between intersection ratio and the accuracy rate. So the smaller ratio we have, the higher accuracy we're getting. And this can be explained in the following way. So the bigger intersection ratio means less feature for feature selection, because we are throwing away almost all the features that we found in both benign and malicious files. They are just not class unique. And this results in smaller class-wise frequency of particular feature. So on this slide, there is a chart of class-wise frequencies for n-gram size of 96 and 16. And they were selected as the best features because of the class-wise frequency. So, and as we can see, when the n-gram size is small, if we remember from the previous slides, the intersection ratio is very high. The unique features get in very low class-wise frequencies, and this results that it's hard for machine learning algorithms to generalize. And it's hard to generalize, then the accuracy is lower. And so to build this chart, we first calculated the sparseness of bitmap of presence. So it's how many zeros we're having in the bitmap. So basically it's how much information we did not get from that bitmap of presence. And after, we calculated the sum of areas under class-wise frequency charts, as we have seen them on the previous slide, for both benign and malicious classes. So as we can see, while areas under class-wise frequency charts are growing, so we're having these areas are growing, bitmap sparseness is decreasing, so we're getting more information. And what proves the statement from the previous slide, that the sparseness results in a bad way our results. And then let's notice the area around n-gram size of 36. I have been pointing out on that on the general chart. And in this area around n-gram size of 36, the speed of area growth and sparseness decreasing is low. So it's more horizontal here and here. And so on this chart, we can see dependency between the classification accuracy of KNN algorithm and the bitmap sparseness. And as we can see, the lower sparseness we have, the higher accuracy we achieve. And from here, we can say that lower sparseness of the bitmap of presence gives more information to the machine learning algorithm. And why we used that slide is because we wanted to explain this accuracy decreasing around n-gram size of 36. So if n-gram size is growing, but bitmap sparseness is not fading, like if it was how it was in the previous slide, and the area under classwise frequency chart is not growing as well. So we achieve the accuracy decreasing. So this result just shows that, as on the previous slide, here we're not getting enough growth of the area under classwise frequency chart, but the sparseness is not decreasing as well, so accuracy is fading. So this slide is just to remind why we pointed out that area. So accuracy is decreased around that n-gram size of 36. And I just lost in my slides. Right, so after we presented the results and analysis, we have also many things to discuss. And first thing we need to notice that most files that were not launched successfully, they contained anti-debug features, and two of them were surprisingly detected being the DLL libraries, like for some reason in the data set provided from Virus Share, even though they claimed that they were only executables, they were some DLL libraries as well. Next, we should mention that not all of the files produced 10 million of memtraces, so some files finished their work even before our predefined length of memory access sequence. And such results probably not giving us better accuracy because we're getting less information, then we can extract less features, and the machine learning algorithms will not be able to generalize. And also we found that all of the files that were launched successfully had a similar memory access subsequence in the beginning of 53 memtraces, and this is a presence of the PE header and MS-DOS header. So as they are P32 executables, they do some similar work before they actually do their original functionality. But this did not affect our results because as it is a similar subsequence, then it was most likely was thrown away from the final feature set. And in the conclusion, we must say that it is possible to use memory access sequences from malware detection, and the n-grams are quite reliable features. So as we were able to see, they gave us the accuracy around 98%. And also the answer to the 30 search question is that increasing of memory access sequence length results in higher classification accuracy. So the proposed malware detection methodology allows us to achieve quite high accuracy, and it can be compared to other papers and research results done by other authors. So in the future, we can try to defeat anti-debug and anti-VM techniques, improve feature selection process in order to reduce feature space because it was quite big, and apply different feature types, or like not only the pure engrams, but randomness profiles or entropy measures. It is also important to bind a particular opcode sequence with a memtrace sequence in order to be able to reveal internal functionality of an executable. So not just the analysis of sequences, but to explain why this sequence was produced. And also one of the tasks is to apply our methodology for the multinomial tasks. So let's say not just differentiate between the malicious and benign executables, but also to be able to detect the malware, different malware types. So some of the preliminary work has been already done. So here we have the 10 memory types, and as it was done for the two-class classification problem, here was done the similar things. So for each of the memory, for each of the malware type, there was generated the memory access sequences, then extracted the engrams, and then the ratio that was on one of the previous slides was also calculated. So, like for example, backdoor is 100% similar to backdoor because we're comparing the two similar memory two similar feature vectors. But for example, if we'll take like password stealers against Trojans, for example, we can see that ratio is not that high. It's like around 0.18. The machine learning models were not trained yet because like the overall algorithm should be improved a bit because for 10 classes it takes too long to work. But from these preliminary results, we must conclude that we potentially can achieve classification accuracy higher than just random if we will try to perform classification, for example, one with all. So if we'll try to detect only worms, and we can see that they are different from all of the other malware types, except, of course, its own worm type. So this is pretty much it for today's. Thank you for your attention, and if you have any questions, please ask.
Thank you very much.
Hi. Thanks for the presentation.
Hello.
I enjoyed it. So I just have a question, actually two questions. So the first one is, when you first created those histograms, I presume they were for the n-grams, did you do that on sort of a holdout set, or did you use the data that you later used for your cross-validation?
So you're talking about these histograms?
No, not those. The vectors you talk about, the n-gram presence, absence vectors, and their frequencies in the classes.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah.
What I mean by histograms.
All right.
So you have sort of a count for each.
Yeah, so I know how many times each n-gram were met within that particular class.
Yeah, so my question now is, did you compute, so you have this data set of benign and malware, and did you create the features using all the available data, and then in the next stage use those features in a sort of a cross-validation experiment, or did you take a random sample for each, held that out, and then
Yes, so all the data were used to produce that feature set, and then the cross-validation were used on that particular
with the
set.
Fixed features then.
Yeah, yeah. But your question is nice, yeah, because it makes sense. It might probably affect the accuracy because some features might remain in the feature set, even though we throw away the instances that are used for the test data set, yeah, like in a cross-validation, but the features produced by that instances still remain in the feature set. So it might result and yeah, this is one of the way to improve and test the validity of the results.
Because when you do the use these features as binary features, you can a priori compute the best accuracy you can get on the data, because you have all the you have the complete information in the features of your data, so you don't really need to run a machine learning model.
No, I need to run the machine learning algorithm, because the general data set, it's binary. It contains zeros and ones, and when we take out one of the instances, but just some bunch, like 20%, if we are getting fivefold, if we're doing fivefold to cross validation, and we're trying to generalize on not the full data set. So the machine learning algorithm tries to estimate which features.
I know yeah. What you did, but at least I hope I understood. But yeah. But
yeah, yeah. You understood
but
it.
But you can do well. We can just take this offline. So
yeah. No problem. Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yes.
So if I might permit it. Maybe. Okay. So the second question is did you ever consider using sort of you have your histogram of or frequency table of the n-grams.
Yeah.
Did you consider using them all and using the frequencies as values? Because then you wouldn't have to throw away anything. And you could use the machine learning model, for instance, to pick the features themselves. For instance, one way of doing that quite efficiently, even for large numbers of features, are using logistic regression, which can be done fairly quickly. So
logistic regression for, well, they're quite highly dimensional data set. It can.
Oh yeah, it's.
Yeah, it depends.
It's very fast, and that's what Google uses often. And so, because it's so fast, for very large, very high dimensional data. But the thing is, then you could potentially just test the statistically the. The influence of
yeah, but why we did not do that? So we're having this vector with frequencies for the class, not for the each malware, not for the each malware or benign sample. So if we will have in our data set not zeros and ones, but the frequencies, then we need to calculate that frequency for the instance in question. So let's say we have a trained model.
Yeah, I understand.
And then yeah, okay. So we need to calculate it, and then for some reason that particular instance will not run for 1 million of memtraces, and then we probably will get we won't get that frequencies, the same frequencies. And as we're taking quite long n-grams, like let's say 96 for example, inside one file the frequencies could be very low. They could be almost around like one instance per run. So
okay, I have two questions also if allowed. You had this small table with the number of the size of the intersection, and if you can show that.
Yes.
That one will do. And in principle, the performance of your system is increasing if I go down, right? And
increasing of the accuracy.
Yeah. So, and you said that then you concluded actually that a decreasing ratio will mean an increasing performance.
Yeah, because if the ratio is smaller, then it means that.
I know that from this data you would get that, but I think that it is not the ratio that is important in this case. I think it's the number of unique benign and malicious n-grams that you have.
So
I mean, that's that increases and hence the performance. If the suppose that in the last line that you also would have a ratio of around 0.45 as you have in the top line, would that so meaning that you had many more in the intersection. Would that mean a poor performance of that? Would you suggest?
Yeah, so if for some reason, yeah, we will have the similar ratio everywhere,
yeah.
then the performance will be lower because we'll get less features for feature selection, and those features that we will find will have smaller classwise frequencies. So there will be a lot of n-grams that are met, like, for example, just 10 times around the data set and not the 100. So
It
will
that's
be harder to stick it together.
I agree. Then in the beginning you had you talked about the static approach.
It was just for the comparison.
That's great, because then you said, well, we had the static approach and then people can just change the code.
They can, I don't know, encrypt it, they can change some
They can add that code and whatever.
Yeah.
Can I add that memory operations? I read a memory location, I add zero to that and I write it back. Then your memory trace will change.
Of course you can.
So did I now find an attack against your detection system?
Yes, you found it, yes.
Okay.
So we were not thinking about counteracting the counter techniques for our approach. So for any approach, you can probably find something.
Okay.
But probably if such approach will be used, I can suggest that we can detect the dead memory operations that does not do anything actually useful, that the results of that operations are not used anywhere else. So it probably might be possible to detect such techniques, but no question.
But
for
not through this method.
Hmm?
Not through the memory trace.
Yeah.
You would have to use XUV. Yeah, any other questions? Yep.
Hello. So my question is, you have the feature set of 200, 400, 600, 800.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
How did you create that feature set? So your features are binary features, right? So did you just accumulated all the n-grams together and said, like, this is the feature vector for this class or something?
So how we created the feature set? Is it the question? How we selected that 200
that
features?
200, how did you?
Okay. So as I said, we have the vector of n-grams found in benign and malicious files. So we excluded the intersection of these two vectors from both of the data, both of the vectors. And as they are arranged by the decreasing of the classwise frequency within the class, so to construct a feature vector of 200, we're taking best or the most frequent features, 100 of them, from benign, then 100 from malicious, and then we combine them and we use it as a data set.
Okay.
Or as a feature set, sorry.
Your presentation, you mentioned, and it was quite obvious that n-gram around 30 has an effect on the performance of the system.
Well, it's it does not have the effect by itself, but in our case, we just got that kind of
situation. That's the result. Do you have some ideas about why?
Well, I have tried to explain it in the statistical way as I did it. So around the n-gram size of 36, you're kind of getting, so around that area, you're kind of getting more information from each of the n-grams because the classwise frequencies are growing. But the metric sparseness of this bitmap of presence, which is used here, is not growing. So we're still having a lot of zeros in our data set. And so even though the features are looks like good enough, they're still not applicable for good generalization. So this is our explanation.
That this might be a problem of the data set that you used. So if you change the data set,
the
data set
might be, yeah. So in the next experiments, the data set will be changed for sure. We'll just take the newer data and run these things.
And another question if we have time.
We don't, but
okay, I think it will be quick. Do you have any is within the goals or within the scope of your research to optimize computationally, or do you have any idea about how you computationally intensive it is?
Sorry, can you